The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week for more years now than some of you have been alive, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And I am super torn right now because there is a whole bunch of stuff coming up in the next 7 days that I want to tell you all about. But on the other hand, I've got Pete Fortunato waiting on the line to talk about the secrets to actually staying in real estate long enough for it to do you any good. I don't know what to do. Okay, I'll tell you about one of them because it's tonight. And then I'll tell you about the other ones after some breaks. The thing that's happening tonight is it is Save My Deal Help Night. Help Night is a service of the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association, and it happens once a month. It is free and open to anybody. There is not a lecture. There's just people there who have been in the business for a really long time on some topic or another. And if you bring your questions, they are able to answer them. And tonight, the question you should bring is, how do I save my deal? Whether it's one that's already going on and it's not going well, or it's one you're trying to do and you can't seem to get anywhere with it, it's going to be a really good opportunity for you to get some experience and advice from a lot of experienced people. You would get your link to that by going to CincinnatiREIA.com. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. Click on the calendar button and just go to today. Click on the link and fill out the little registration form, and it will send you a link for tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So now I feel better that I got at least one of these checked off the list. Now let's go to tonight's guest, Mr. Peter Fortunato. Doesn't like it when I say nice things about him and his experience, but so let me just the factoids. He bought his first house while he was still in college, and I was 1 year old. And he's buying property. He's been buying properties ever since then, and is an extremely creative deal maker. And he's joining us from his home in Madeira Beach, Florida. Pete, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, Vina.
Hi, Pete.
Always excited when any of this technology works.
Yes. Well, I mean, you're just on your phone, right? So, I mean, that's some pretty basic. I was pretty sure that was going to work for you. And hopefully it will continue to work. So you have literally been investing in real estate since the 1960s.
Yep, 1965.
You have, so you actually bought your first house before I was born. I'm going to have to update my.
No. I just started trying to buy my first house before you were born.
Okay. Clearly, you have not had the problem that other people have had about longevity in this business, because you and I both know that a huge percentage of the people who, quote, decide to invest in real estate never actually get to the stage of making any investments. Why were you able to do it when other people can't?
I was a believer. I believe that the country I grew up in was a land of opportunity, and I believed that if I acquired assets, the assets could provide me with income, and I wanted income, and I didn't want to have to work. So I set out as early as possible, intent on getting enough rental property so that it would provide me with my lifestyle and I could do whatever I pleased with my time.
It sort of sounds like what you're saying is I just made a decision. And the thing is, a lot of people kind of make that same decision that I'm going to change my life and real estate's going to be the way that I do it. But
I think I made a decision and I made a promise. I made a promise to me, and that was a very important promise for me to keep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I shared that promise. Every time I watch you counseling somebody, I see you holding them accountable, and that accountability is so very, very important. Mm-hmm. I've really been pretty good at holding myself accountable during my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Who did you share it with?
Everybody on earth.
Who could be reached by normal technology in 1965?
There was no one in the town I grew up in that did not know that it was my intention to acquire enough property so I could be free. Remember, that's the discussion I had with my guidance counselor when I was in high school, and I told her that I wanted to be unemployed when I got done with high school.
Okay. So that made you feel more under pressure to actually do the thing?
Well, I had people asking me, how are you doing? And some of them were asking, how are you doing, hoping I wasn't doing well. But most of them were really rooting for me, I think.
Okay, well, let's come at this from the other perspective, because you've also been teaching for a really long time. I know my father was in a class that you were co-teaching back in like the late 70s, maybe early 80s, something like that.
Yeah.
And so you have seen all these people who, I mean, if you ask them, they would say, I'm trying and I'm committed, and then they don't actually, I mean, many of them don't do anything. Like they don't make an offer, much less buy a property.
Right.
And then there's others that like they get to a certain point, you know, maybe they've even done a deal or two, but then it gets hard. They have a tenant problem or something, and they just sell everything they have. So what patterns are you seeing with the people who are not actually getting to that financial freedom stage?
Well, I always thought that the capitalist in America was someone who started with the dream. They believed that it was possible to replace yourself with capital. Then, based upon that dream of doing it, they went out and started to acquire. Then once they'd started, they had some. They managed that portfolio, improved its quality, improved the quantity if they were chasing an empire, and ultimately became an ender. At the end, it does not mean you're dead. End means you have enough assets now to do whatever you please with your life. And so I thought everyone did that. And those who didn't just never had the dream. They didn't read the history of the United States. They didn't watch their relatives and their neighbors who came from other places seeking opportunity. And so not seeing it, they didn't realize it was possible. And interestingly enough, a couple of months ago, I did a talk with Chad Carson, and Chad talked about how the dreams that he heard people talking about were fragile, and that they actually had the dream but allowed it to be destroyed by things that I would have taken as insignificant. And I was very interested in seeing that someone who is certainly a generation or a generation and a half behind me had a different perception. He really thought everybody dreamed, but they didn't have the backbone to stick it out, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting to me, because I really thought just most people didn't dream. They went to school and they learned to be a wage slave, and then they were wage slaves.
No, I got to agree with Chad on that. I see a lot of people who dream, and then you know who crushes their dreams is the people closest to them. It's their family. It's their friends.
Starting with them.
Yes. But also, people get a lot of feedback that, you know, you shouldn't try that because it's not going to work, or you can't do it, or do you remember when you were 7 and you had that lemonade stand and you were out there for like an hour and then it got too hot and you came back in? The same thing's going to happen with your real estate. You know that, right? Sometimes the people closest to you are like weirdly unsupportive of anything you want to do that's good for yourself.
When I was at the summit last year at Great Wolf, you had the speaker who talked about storytelling. And he said the most important story you hear or tell is the one you tell yourself. And that was absolutely correct.
Agreed. So you think that the thing that they have in common is that they just never make it from dreamer to starter?
I think you're right. They are destined to have a job. I went to a careers night in our careers day in a high school, and everyone who spoke there talked about having a job and ending their life on Social Security. And nobody talked about entrepreneurism or capitalism, all the dreams that made America the land of opportunity, the great place that it was.
Mm-hmm. Very true. We need to take a quick break. I want to invite our listeners who have some comment on this topic or who would like to ask you a question on your opinion of it to give us a call at 877-772-9658. I'm going to say that number again, 877-772-9658. Or you can just send it via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today is Pete Fortunato. We're talking about how to have a lifespan in real estate long enough to actually reach the goal. Because most of our goals is not just to like own bricks and mortar. It's to have a certain level of personal freedom, time freedom, and a lot of that goes back to financial freedom. Mm-hmm. You can give us a call at 877-772-9658. You can also send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. I told you guys I was gonna drip the big things that were happening over the next week out to you after the breaks. Next big one is on Tuesday, the week from yesterday, Jerry Fink is doing a pop-up class called How to Not Go Broke on Your Next Rehab. What is the topic of that? He's going to teach you how to estimate repair costs, because that's how people go broke on rehabs, is they don't know how much they're going to cost to fix. So that pop-up is free, and everybody who shows up will be given a rehab cheat sheet that has about 40 different categories of work that you would normally do to a property and what they should cost in 2026, because, boy, those prices are changing every minute. Get your seat at the free pop-up by going to cincinnatirea.com. And while you are there, check out the 1031 exchange class that's happening on Saturday. That one is being conducted by an attorney who is also an exchange intermediary. He's going to go all the way from the basics of what is a 1031 exchange, what are the rules, what do I have to comply with, where does the money go, all the way up to some more sophisticated things like repair exchanges and reverse exchanges. So unless you just love paying taxes, you probably ought to check that class out on Saturday, also at cincinnatirea.com. Okay, so Pete, we actually have a question that came in during the break from SK, who, as I recall, is in Colorado. Help, I'm old enough to get Social Security, but I'm not experienced in real estate. How do I start and where? I've been trying for about 5 years. Things have fallen through. Syndications didn't work. Notes, not so much. I bought and sold some houses, mostly to live in. What the heck do I do now?
Well, you start with a goal. If he's looking for an inexpensive place to live, that's one thing. If he's looking to raise some money by buying and selling, That's another thing. If you want the excitement of fixing and flipping, you can listen to Jerry tomorrow night and then give that a try. But really need to know what it is we're targeting. My first thought in hearing him say it is perhaps sandwich leasing, where he leases somebody else's property and just built some cash flow for himself to help him out in his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
John Schaub talks about his dad, who in his 60s said to John, you know, I'm going to be short when I retire in a couple of years. And they went out and bought three houses. And those three houses gave him an inflation hedge on top of his pension and ultimately were paid off, giving him the inflation hedge and additional income.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great story about a real deal.
Mm-hmm.
Done by a gentleman who got into his 60s and then realized his pension wasn't going to be adequate.
Mm-hmm. It might even help SK to start with the goal, not of, you know, what strategy do I want to do, but how much extra money do I feel like I'm going to need every month? Because that might determine for you whether it's lease options, whether it's subject twos, whether it's rentals, whether it's Airbnb.
And he might look at his stuff. He may be old enough that he's got some really high constant debt that he could refinance to lower his payments and increase his cash flow. And he may be there and just not realize it because of the structure of the debt he has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So set goals and work from there. And of course, reach out to other people for help once you get to that step of, yes, I want to, I knew I need to add $3,000 a month to my income, then reach out from there and say, how do I do that? Got an email here from Robert from Tampa. He says, Pete succeeded because he kept promises to himself, I think he said. For those who do not keep every promise to ourselves, what would Pete suggest?
Well, I think what we were talking about, and I was mentioning Chad talking about the fragility of dreams.
Uh-huh.
I think I did promise myself that I was going to get enough assets. And then I went out and made the offers, and some of them worked, and others of them did not or did not work as well. Because if you try, sometimes you miss. But I think that a lot of people fail to make that promise. And if you don't hold yourself accountable, if you don't say, I am going to do this, I think it's very easy to just drift along with things and people and not move forward. When I talk to people about your life is your fault, I was shocked at how offended some people were by my saying it that way. And I've always found that it made me proud that what I caused was a good thing, and sometimes made me ashamed of myself when what I attempted to cause turned out badly.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also something to keeping the promise in front of yourself. Because life does tend to get in the way. Now, you never had a job, but when people have jobs, many times, you know, the demands of the work and then the family and then this and that so get in the way that the promise kind of becomes a thing that, you know, somebody asked me a while back if I was on a diet, and I said, I'm always on a diet in my head. Doesn't mean I'm acting like I'm on a diet, but in my head, yes, I'm on a diet. And I think a lot of people are like that about real estate. And if they don't keep it in front of them, if they don't have some way of reminding themselves that, yeah, this other stuff's going on, but this real estate thing needs to go on too, they just lose it.
Well, if you don't make the promise, or if you fail to prioritize the promise you made to yourself, you've got an issue. It's very, very easy for me to get lost in a problem of someone else's. And I will really work long and hard to help them with it. But I will not lose what I'm trying to do for my family and the people I love.
Mm-hmm. You've been through a lot of markets. You've been through the stagflation of the 70s. You've been through the Resolution Trust Corporation issues in the 80s. You've been through the subprime lending and the subsequent crash. And like all of this stuff has happened, and you have just kept right on going. What has that taught you about being adaptable?
Well, I think ignoring macroeconomics and paying attention to microeconomics is a key to being successful, because you're successful in real estate and in other fields by helping people who have a problem or a challenge or an uncomfortable circumstance. And it's that person sitting across the table, or that family sitting in my living room talking to me about what they need to do. And I'm asking the question, why would you sell a nice house like this? And discovering that they just had twins and they need more space. The doctor told them they couldn't handle stairs. They need to move closer to a job. They're getting divorced. Whatever happened, now that is my problem. When I was at I Survived Real Estate in the fall, they had a gentleman from FDIC, from Fannie Mae, and they had the chief economist for California Association of Realtors, and they were all talking about, wow, you know, what are we going to do? Interest rates are 7 and 8. And I said, well, you know, I know what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out and make an offer tonight to have somebody finance a deal for me at 3%. And it's that deal I'm going to attempt to negotiate with a human being. It's not the market. And so for me, it's one at a time, and the people that are in front of me command my attention. And the what's going on in the market frames the playing field, but it doesn't frame the play that I'm going to attempt.
Mm. Have your actual real estate strategies, though, like, I mean, exit strategies, like what am I buying and what am I doing with it? Have those changed over time?
My real estate strategies have been you buy it and hold it until you die. Now, and so when I bought, when I was in college and I started attempting to buy, and I wrote 200 contracts, none of which closed. Now, some of them were actually accepted, getting my hopes up, but didn't close. I finally closed on my first property. And it was a small multi that I got subject to a first and subject to a second back in the 1960s when there was no due on sale clause. So subject to was important because the seller's credit was on the line, but it was not the legal issue that you have now, that the banks have paid off the congressman to get the law to favor the banks. And so I bought subject to without that being an issue. My second one was subject to and a seller carry. My third one was a seller carry. My fourth one was a seller carry. And ultimately, I ended up with six buildings with 20 units in them. And then one of those triplexes I had had a unit that was rented by the lady who very shortly thereafter became my wife. And we then changed the 20 units in six buildings to single family houses because I wanted more free time. And the reason for that change was I wanted more free time, and the people in the apartment buildings wanted my attention. They wanted to call and say, oh, our light bulb burned out. Would you come on over and screw a new one in? And I wasn't good at that. And so I went to single-family houses. Gene and I then, along with having four kids in 5 years, acquired 33 rental houses before we moved to Tampa. We got to Tampa with four kids, oldest seven, and we had 33 houses. And it was too many for us because we wanted time with our children. And so we took the 33 down to 22 better houses. And so those adjustments came because of our personal situation and our goal. And my goal, I think it was Damon again at the summit who said, you got to decide, are you empire building or are you lifestyle building? And I very much have been a lifestyle builder, just trying to acquire or develop a life where I could do what I wanted, not that I could go surpass my friends who have more than 1,000 houses.
Mm-hmm. So you were pretty dogged about your goal right from the beginning, but at the same time, you were willing to switch around exactly how you were getting there at the moment, depending on marriage, children, children growing up, all those things.
Yeah, I mean, it changed. We changed when we were going from 33 to 22 houses. We traded three little 2-1 houses, and we never had bad neighborhoods, but they were our least three properties for one really nice three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath home on what they call a lake here in Florida, but it's really a pond. And so we went to one very nice house from three, giving us less work, giving us less gross income. I thought it would give us more upside, and it didn't. It's probably relatively equivalent.
I have lots more questions, and we also have more questions in the inbox, but we do need to take a quick break. Just want to remind listeners, if you'd like to get in on this conversation about how to have longevity in the real estate business, how to not give up when you have kids and it gets too hard to manage multifamilies, how to keep going even when other people are trying to crush your dreams, give us a call at 877-772-9658 or send it via email, vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox, here in the last 8 minutes or so of our discussion with Mr. Peter Fortunato, who is helping us to understand what it takes to stay in the real estate business for a really long time. I have a question here from Karen, who is also from sort of your neck of the woods, Pete. She says, I'm retired. I've had rentals. I'm looking to do something different in real estate that will give me either decent income or some quick cash, maybe a flip. What do you recommend for an older person?
Well, again, you need to know where you're starting from. If you need more income, then you want to improve the net income you have from the existing rentals you have. If you've got too many properties for your retirement, you may want to end up papering out some of the properties you have. But I would warn you to be prepared to take that paper back into real estate, because that the income from the paper is going to melt because of all the inflation we're looking at in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Just got an email from Jennifer saying,
the guys, you know, I'm 79 years old and I have a lot of friends who flip. I have a friend right here who used to come to McDonald's, but we've embarrassed him too much. He won't come back anymore. he owned 30 waterfront properties here, and every one of them he flipped. And I don't think he ever made less than $50,000. I mean, he was a very successful flipper. And today he's got great stories, but no wealth. If you want to develop wealth, you want to keep some capital assets. Mm-hmm. And so I hesitate to tell people to flip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, sometimes when people get to be in their 60s, maybe things happen, like they get a divorce and they lose half of their properties to their ex-spouse, and it feels like starting all over again, and it feels like too late. It feels like it took me 20 years to get the equity and income from those properties that I just lost half of. How in the world can I start again?
Well, if you don't start again, you're not going to get there. It's like when people say, we're not making it. We say, well, tell us about an offer you made that didn't work. And they say, offer? We haven't made an offer. And they're waiting for somebody to beat their door down and force them to take the house. And you have to go out and pursue the things you want.
We are running out of time here, so I want to get to some of these questions that I had sent you earlier, even as the email box is filling up at 5 minutes till the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Seriously, now you're asking your questions. You should know better than this by now. Mistakes. I assume you've made some.
Oh, I sure have. But you don't. If you're not making any mistakes, then you're clearly not doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that somebody makes a financial decision, anytime they make any decision, they are trying to better themselves. And capitalism is the best of freedom. It's people giving something that they value less for something that they value more. And when you make that choice to give something up that you value less for something more, sometimes what you get is not more, it is worse.
Hmm.
When that happens, your goal is to learn from that, not to give up and say, I'm never going to do that again by never doing anything again. And If you are a capitalist and you go out and you trade with people, giving them something better, and we know it's better because they took it, they, absent of coercion, they took it, then you have an ally there that every time you make a mistake, every time you have a problem, you've got somebody to go talk to and say, how can I do this better? I need something. When I had the stents, when I had my arteries all clogged up and I had to go into the hospital to have the stents put in, I went and sat with a dozen of my friends and whined about the fact that the only thing I like to do is talk. And they said, well, why don't you go and do classes with other people and let them do all the work? And I said, what a great idea.
But let me call
Dina. I don't know that I would have thought of that on my own. I did because I sat with my friends and said, I'm really troubled by this. I want to do absolutely no work, and I really enjoy expressing my opinion.
So was there ever a minute in all this time that you seriously considered quitting?
No. Absolutely never. I mean, when I had 200 contracts written, some of them accepted, and none of them closed in the first 2 years. But I had made a promise to me, and my life has been about my pride in keeping my promises.
Hmm. What do you think newer investors spend a lot of time worrying about that they really shouldn't?
Legality.
Say more.
They made it so easy for people to say, well, can't do that. That's illegal. There's regulations against that. If you go out and you help people and you understand that right and wrong is important and you need to know what's right and wrong, being fearful of government holds people back.
I really hope that everybody heard the subtlety there, that illegal and unethical are two different things, and that you should not do things that are unethical, and you should not go out and hurt people because that's illegal, you know, stealing from people, committing fraud, that's all illegal. You're saying more the ticky tacky things
at the summit a couple of years ago, I told the story about my dad running for school committee, and we were told we couldn't go on the other side of the yellow line that the government had drawn on the sidewalk, because if we were on the other side of the line, we in, We put an inordinate duress on a person who was going to vote, and there was an old lady with a walker who was heading for the stairs to the school to go vote, and she was going to fall down the stairs. And the 40-year-old adults who were around me were standing there muttering and saying, you know, she's going to die. And I put down my dad's sign. My dad was running for school board. And I ran across the street, crossing the dreaded yellow line, and held the door and helped the woman down the stairs. And I came back upstairs, went back across the street in front of the library, and the police came. And my dad came a few minutes later, and they said, my dad said, well, what's going on? And the police said to my father, he not only crossed the line, he went all the way to the door. And my dad said, you know, he, you knew you couldn't go all the way to the door. I said, Dad, lady, walker, elderly, going to fall to her death. I went, held the door, helped her down the stairs, then came back, picked up the sign, and went back to work. And my father put his hand on my shoulder and said, Peter, you did exactly the right thing. And that day, I learned the difference between right and wrong and legal and illegal. And I think people get so worried about whether they could rent to somebody or whether they would make somebody feel bad or whether they would have lead paint brought in on a piece of, on a door that they buy at a yard sale. I think people's fear of crossing a line sets people back tremendously at getting started. I talk to people all the time who are frightened of the marketplace.
Excellent. Well, if you feel like you need more Pete Fortunato, you better come to the 2026 National Summit on November the 5th through 8th. You can get discounted tickets right now by pledging to WMKV. The way to do it is just go to WMKVFM.org. Scroll down to the bottom. You'll see the National Summit sign. As long as there's still tickets left, you can get two of them for $297, which again is a serious discount. Pete, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate your wisdom as always. And everybody, remember to join us tonight at Save My Deal Help Night. You can get your Zoom link for that at CincinnatiRadio.com. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.
Thanks again, everybody.